Hey everybody, JJ Cooper, Mark Chiarelli, another of the Baseball America Prospect Podcast Deep Dives. Today we are taking an in-depth look at the Athletics farm system, a system that produced Jacob Wilson and then turned around and produced Nick Kurtz, our not only the AL Rookie of the Year, but like one of the great rookie seasons we have seen in recent years. Less than a year after he was drafted, he was one of the best first basemen in the American League. That is kind of the kind of instant production that you dream about when you draft a player. We've seen that, and now we're going to take a look in depth at what the A's still have coming. And Mark, one of the things that really does jump out is we could talk about the guys that they've produced, but they also then landed the best prospect we have seen traded at the deadline in quite a while in Leo DeVries, part of the Mason Miller trade. And that kind of made the decision of who's number one in this system, I imagine, a little bit easier than it would have been if you would have been battling between Jamie Ardell and Gage Jump, which I know you and I spent a whole lot of time kind of debating those two guys back and forth. Then DeVries shows up and it's like, oh, okay, that's a debate, but who's two and who's three?
Yeah, he very opportune timing in his arrival because, and I think we both like the depth of this system, but there was a brief moment where without Nick Kurtz at the top, things are starting to look a little barren at the top of the system. And then here comes, at the time, a top five prospect. So the debate about who was number one, even when you poll people inside or outside the organization, didn't have to go too far. Leo DeVries was the answer. I think the more interesting debate or conversation that we had was more where he slotted in this year among the top prospects in baseball. And as you can see, year over year, he did drop ever so slightly out of the top five. He's now 13th, I believe, on our top 100 entering the season. So maybe some slight nitpicks or questions relative to where he was last year as far as the overall landscape. But when it comes to this organization, very clearly the top prospect.
And I would say with DeVries, the things that stood out when I was making calls, talking to scouts last year, I feel like that for all of him dropping a little bit, there are not that many questions offensively, although it's always a difficult evaluation. The way the Padres move players makes for a difficult evaluation because they're often at a level so far beyond their contemporaries as far as what level they're playing at, that when they struggle, you could either say, oh, they're struggling, or you can say, yeah, but they're the youngest player in the league by far. You could talk about that. And then DeVries did get better and better. But the other thing that I kept getting, and obviously you've done more reporting than I have on this, I was getting really solid reports as far as like, this is a surefire, potentially defensively impactful shortstop. What is your sense of like, if you're an A's fan, you're watching this, I think there's a question of, okay, DeVries is coming. He can't be that far away if he was already at AA last year, even if he's incredibly young. When he arrives, is he a guy who you say, hey, Jacob Wilson, maybe second base, looks really good for you. Maybe third base looks really good for you. And DeVries goes to shortstop. Or is it something where the defense for DeVries is such that maybe DeVries is the one who's on the move?
I think DeVries' defensive upside far surpasses Wilson. And I don't think the A's were overly enthralled or have been overly enthralled with Wilson's shortstop defense so far in the majors. I think the opinions on his defense that I got maybe ran the gamut a little bit more than what you described. I think there are times where you see a tremendous arm, you see the ability to make tougher plays than the average shortstop, make it look easy. I think at times he shows a really good internal clock. At other times, I think that the game can speed up on him. There's some just overall youth or defensive maturity questions with him that popped up, especially once he got to the A system. So I think that there's some sharpening on the defensive side, whether it's routine, pre-pitch positioning, some of the nuances. I feel like they think that there's some room to go there. But if you catch him on the right day or even the right week, you think it's at least an above average shortstop, if not more. So if I had to project out in the future, I think he has a better chance at sticking at shortstop. But I will say it's not without some areas that still need to be cleaned up.
21 errors last year, 941 fielding percentage, obviously lower than you're going to want and you expect at the big league level. But then that comes that caveat that we just talked about before, which is, yes, but this was also a teenager who played at high A and then double A, where you said like, okay, he doesn't have the experience that maybe he just needs to learn some of those things. It's that balance of what you're seeing the flashes of, but can he get to the consistency, right?
Yeah, I felt like at times too, even when you go back and watch Synergy, the arm accuracy wavered a lot with him. There were times where you could very clearly see that he got sped up and he started to spray throws. And I think that if he can get that dialed in, the strength is there and he can make every play. There are times where you fire up Synergy and watch him and it's a lot of fun.
No, that's, we've talked about it on the podcast before, but like one of the things I wanted to do that I wanted everyone to look at for us on the staff is I pulled up basically the best plays for all of the top 100 shortstops. And we sent that around and doing these little cutups. And now that is a best case scenario, right? Those are, you're not talking about what you just talked about. You're not talking about the routine grounder to short where he doesn't, you know, attack it aggressively enough. And then he has to hurry his throw and he doesn't get his feet set and the throw, you know, leads the first baseman off the bag. That's not the plays that I was grabbing. I was grabbing like, show me the best that this guy can look, because the assumption being in general, doesn't always work this way, but in general, shortstops, teenage shortstops, I would say often commit errors. It's almost not a bad thing when you see that a teenage shortstop had 25 errors. You can always use the Derek Jeter example of what he was in A-ball and how many errors he made. You almost would rather have that than the guy who just can't make the play, who just kind of puts the ball and is, you want those guys to figure out what they can do and can't do. And the guys who can't, often are the ones who are a little bit more reliable because they just get to a ball. It's like, oh, I can't make that play. You want the guys who early on in their career have that arrogance of like, I can make every play. And then eventually they realize, you know, if I'm going behind second base and I have to spin and throw and I'm jumping while I'm doing it and I've got a 5% chance of getting the guy out, maybe I should just keep that ball in my pocket. You want them to be, again, an unnecessary arrogance almost enough that they can make that play till they learn they can't. You see that a little bit with DeVries at time. And I mean that in a good way. Like the best plays that he makes are ones where you're like, wow, that was really good. Or even the best plays he almost makes are ones where you say, wow, that was almost a really good play. I see what he was trying to do there. I would much rather have that than the guy who, you know, okay, the ball's two steps into the hole. He fields it. And he just kind of puts it in his pocket. It's like, I don't have the arm to make that throw. Okay. Yep. You're not going to play shortstop long term.
Yeah. Leo knows he has the arm to make that throw. He has the arm to make any throw. And I think part, like you said, it's knowing when to let it go and when to not. I had a very interesting, shortstop defensive deep dive experience this winter too, because the other system that I do for us is the Pirates. So it was a lot of watching Connor Griffin, a lot of watching Leo DeVries. And to your point, the necessary arrogance, I really like that term, shows up with both. I think it was interesting at times watching DeVries because there was a little more rawness to his approach, even relative to Griffin. And I know we have a separate podcast to talk about Connor Griffin, but yet another reason why one guy is one in the top 100 and the other we're trying to maybe find a home for a couple spots below, but it's a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun, but I do want to talk about here. We just mentioned if it had been for the DeVries acquisition, it would have been Jamie Arnold versus Gage Jump as the clear, they were the next guys up, but which one was going to be first among those two guys? I would say you can see it in our top 100. You could barely stick a piece of paper in between those two guys when it comes to, you could make the case for either one as the next up. Arnold ended up being your number two. Jump ended up being three. What kind of led to like, okay, at the end of the day, even though I will emphasize, this is a very small difference, but what was it's like, okay, Arnold's going to be ahead of Jump on this.
Yeah, I think there were a couple things. One, I think Arnold has in ever so slight lead in some of the more traditional evaluation areas or scouting indicators. He has good size, great track record of production at Florida State. He's got a chance for 3+ pitches. It's a pretty explosive operation coming down the mound. So I think those things stood out for him. A part of what we do is report. I mean, we're reporting these lists as deep as we can. And I think in conversations with a lot of folks internally, I think Arnold ever so slightly had the edge for probably the reasons that I said before. And also he was the 11th pick in the draft. He's at first round coming in. He hasn't made his pro debut yet. So it was very close. I think with Jump, Jump has some pitch data that really blows you away. Like the fastball characteristics are impeccable. You know, I think he's got a really fun sleeper that he worked on and kind of evolved over last year. You can see the pitch mix. There's when you watch him in visually evaluate him, it's kind of a herky jerky delivery. There's size, there's elbow surgery on his ledger. So there's some risk there. I think that it was really close. Arnold just won out by a whisker.
That kind of leads into the next question. When you look at where the system is now compared to what it was a year ago, obviously it does not have Nick Kurtz. Ranking wise, I think we had him 11th last year, 9th now. So they're very similar range. But the thing that really does stand out is the way this system lines up now is very different, it feels like, than it was a year ago. And a year ago, it was, you know, we're coming off of Jacob Wilson, but as the Kurtz, it was a hitter heavy system. You know, not just them. We've seen the A's push multiple position players to the majors in recent years. Now, if you look at the system, obviously DeVries leads the way. We have Yohensi Colome at number four, who just signed one of the best international prospects in this year's class. He moves right in at four, which, by the way, that is a very high ranking. That kind of just signifies how well regarded he is kind of coming out of this, the January 15th signing day. But those are the only two position players in the top six. This is a very, and it, you go beyond that, like you get to the teens and it's just all pitchers for a while. How, you know, when you're kind of doing this, it feels like that the shape of this system has changed significantly from a year ago, more than it has kind of moved up or down.
That's correct. It's more pitcher heavy, especially at the top, than I can remember in the last couple of years of doing this system. And that's what you want when you look at the major league roster composition and where this team could go this year. The big question is how quickly can some of these guys get there? I think the answer is pretty quickly, whether it's Arnold or Jump, even Wei-Yin Lin ended last year at AA. So it's certainly pitching heavy. On the flip side, we've become accustomed to the upper level hitting depth or in upper level hitting impact outside of DeVries. There's a lot of question marks there. We have Henry Bolte ranked 7th. If everything goes right for Henry Bolte, you know, it's immense upside. It's tools all over the board. The if everything goes right is doing a lot of heavy lifting because there are significant contact.
If everything goes wrong,
yeah,
he's not a regular.
If everything goes wrong, he's probably out of the system, you know, in the not too distant future. So he's a very high risk, high reward guy that I don't know that you have a ton of confidence in the top 10 as far as his bat being able to help you for long stretches this season. But I do really like the pitching. I think they've done a really good job over the last 2 years. And their previous pitching coordinator, Mike McFerrin, came in and they targeted some guys with outlier release characteristics and they figured out a good way to weaponize them. I mean, you look at Jamie Arnold, it's such a low slot. It's a slot that hitters don't really see from the left side. Jump's kind of the opposite where he's that upshoot riding fastball. Even Lin is kind of all arms and legs coming down the mound at you. You kind of go up and down and, they've started to figure out, and it's different types of arms. It's not necessarily just one type of pitcher over and over and over again. And they've started to do a much better job figuring out how to get more out of pitchers like that. And I think that it's reflected in this list this year.
I do want to kind of hit on that, what you just said there, like to lay it out, like big picture with this. Like, so this is an organization that in the last couple of years, you know, Tyler Soderstrom had his kind of breakout year move him, you know, kind of, they've kind of, I feel like he had the year where you're like, okay, now he's no longer, is he going to emerge? He's now a key part of this. You know, we obviously talked about Wilson. We've talked about Kurtz. But on top of that, Denzel Clark, who I think is being asked, go be the best defensive center fielder in the American League. And what you hit will be a nice little bonus. Lawrence Butler has gotten there too. You know, I would say that Shea Langeliers is not old by any stretch of imagination. There's a really Colby Thomas probably is on the bench somewhere. This team has produced a lot of obviously Langeliers with Trey, but this team has produced a lot of players, young players who are now in the lineup and not just in the lineup, but in the lineup and can be expected. You can count on Wilson. You can count on Clark. You can count on, I mean, defense and Clark, Kurt, you can count on Kurtz. You can count on Soderstrom. You have these guys where you're no longer, these are no longer, what will these guys be? You are saying these are cornerstone guys. And then you flip over to the rotation. And it's kind of what you're saying here. Now, there are the Savalis, the Jeffrey Springs, and the Jacob Lopez's, and all guys who are there. But there is clearly room, I would say, for the Gage Jumps and the Jamie Arnolds and all to kind of the Lens to move up, move in. But the other thing I'll say with that is I do kind of wonder, this does not mean Gage Jump makes the opening day rotation, but what they saw last year with Kurtz, I'm not faulting them. Like, Nick Kurtz had pretty much had no minor league experience coming off of an injury plagued draft year at, you know, in college. But Nick Kurtz, in hindsight, he was like, he just kept hitting, driving the ball game after game in spring training. I was over out in spring training. I remember seeing him like going, I feel like he doubles every time I see him. He was doing that in spring training. In hindsight, if they had just said, here you go, here's the job, they would have gotten an extra pick because he came up too late to get a PPI pick. I'm not saying that if Gage Jump or Jamie Arnold looks really good in spring training, they're pitchers. It's a little bit harder to win rookie of the year in their scenarios. You're probably going to limit them innings wise and all that. But I do think they've seen, like with Wilson, they've seen with Kurtz, moving guys fast, especially college guys, been mainly position players, but moving those guys quickly hasn't come back to hurt them yet, I feel like.
100%. And I know that there's some prospect promotion incentive regret in hindsight, looking back at with what happened with Kurtz. I mean, but I also think that there was a sustained track record of hitting development, even on the minor league side. I know we've talked about this in the past where you did the study looking back at how much power each system produces, and the A's were kind of always at the top. And it's also, there is a correlation there to draft capital, right? They prioritize hitters at the top of the draft for a number of years, and that came to fruition. And now you're starting to see the pitching piece come. I mean, Arnold is a premium pick. You're starting to see it on the minors. The challenge is, how quickly can you replicate the success where these guys get to the majors and keep getting better? I think if you're looking for optimism or a sign of encouragement, when Luis Morales got to the majors last year, he continued to refine. When Jack Perkins got to the majors, he was really good. I know he got hurt, and that's really a big issue with him. But those two guys, their development, didn't stall out. It's continuing. I think they're both going to be key pieces. Now you look at this system, the guys coming next, and it's almost like a race. I think that if the A's hit like we expect them to hit, and I think it's one of the most exciting homegrown lineups in baseball, they should be around 500. They can be on the fringe of a wild card spot. And then it's how quickly can you get these guys there? So I think Arnold and Jump, the A's have never scared from moving guys aggressively. I think, and I mentioned this earlier, I would throw Wei-Yin Lin in there, even though he's only 19. I'd put Braden Nett in that conversation as a upper level guy with some really interesting, spin characteristics. He's got a deep kitchen sink of pitches that he can throw at guys. There's depth there. And I think that if they can avoid, some of the struggles, and they had just a terrible stretch last year between May and June, if they're around 500, you're going to see some of these guys move pretty aggressively. The only other piece I would say too, that is a real question mark, and it's even a challenge as we kind of project this out, is just there's some wonkiness there with the home ballpark too, as it relates to how these pitchers are developing once they, or continuing to improve once they get to the majors. And I think that also is certainly helps some of the offensive output here with some of these guys in their lineup. But I don't know that they've solved that part of it. And it is a temporary issue, I guess, until they get to Vegas. But that's another element that we're seeing them try to work through.
I will say with that, like, it's hard to imagine them catching the Mariners, who have done a good job. We're in the ALCS last year, weren't that far away from the World Series, and then have done a lot of good work this offseason to kind of buttress that team. You look at the rest of this division and you say, okay, the Rangers, the Astros, and definitely the Angels, like anyone else, like they could be, I could see wild card contention being like, again, that's kind of a best case scenario, but it's not crazy. Like you just laid out that this team could get there. And that'd be the first time in a while. Like, Now, I will ask then, the DeVries timetable. We always ask the question, who's your guess to be next year's number one? I'll phrase it this way to start. We'll talk about DeVries first. What do you think are the chances that DeVries could graduate this year? Is that too soon?
I don't think it's too soon. I would not be surprised if he gets there. I did broach this over the winter, and there was some distinction made. You mentioned it earlier, too. They've been comfortable aggressively moving college guys. We have not seen it yet with a teenager or an international signing. I think that there was acknowledgement across the board that he has a lot of areas of his game that he still needs to clean up. So while I know that the A's traditionally or historically last couple of years have been aggressive, I don't know that it's going to be DeVries that's the one that they're racing through. But he did that in the year in Double A Midland. I'd probably put it at maybe a 30%, a 35%. I'd go less than 50-50. But again, the longer that you're in contention and they have not been able to figure out a third base solution for the last 2 years. I don't even know that second base is something that they feel great about. There's opportunity there.
I will say, if he does, that would be amazing from the standpoint of this is a player who's going to play all year at 19. To just put it in perspective, you know, we have Rock Chulowski as our number one draft prospect. Rock Chulowski is basically a year and a half older than Leo DeVries. Like, I could see that. To me, like, if you ask me to guess, I could see him getting to the majors by the end of the year. That's very possible. Graduating, I think, feels that's going to be tougher. 45 days or 130, you know, at bats. That would be a very speedy ascent for a guy who will basically be 20 when next, you know, an opening day next year arrives. With 20 next year, okay, I would expect him to graduate in 27. But okay, assuming. Let's just take him out of it. Let's say, like, who's next up? I would say with you just laid this out. With Arnold and Jump, either of them, if they have the season that makes them the clear number one, it's hard for me to imagine that they do that. Arnold could. I mean, he is basically a draftee from last year, but both of those guys feel like that there's a good chance that they would then graduate. I think that they're kind of more likely to graduate than DeVries. Is there anyone that you look at on here, like, you know, Lynn, you just laid out the kind of the same scenario. Like, if Lynn's really good, he could graduate. Colomé is obviously next up from the standpoint of he's number four on this list, but I think that that's a tough one from a standpoint of it's not that we'll never rank a guy who hasn't played full season ball number one in a system, but he's not going to play full season ball this year. We'll see if it's entirely DSL. That's normally not the guy who's the number one prospect. It could be a high prospect in the system, but not number one. Mm-hmm. So let's even take him out of it. Is there someone else who you look at and say, this could be a candidate internally? And then I'll get to kind of the part that's currently external.
Sure. So I think Jump has a much higher likelihood of graduating than Arnold. Even last year, I mean, we've talked about Trey Savage, Nolan McLean had a meteoric rise. Those guys are still eligible this year. Bubba Chandler was another one who's still retained his prospect eligibility. I think for Arnold to graduate off this list would have to be like a 99th, 100th percentile type season. He hasn't even made his pro debut yet. So I would say Arnold is the favorite. We ruled out Colomé. The one interesting guy is Edgar Montero. We have him eighth right now. And he repeated the DSL. Which is not a flashing big red flag at this point. I think that teams are you know, a little bit more willing to send guys back now than maybe they were in the past. But it also, you have to look at his production with skepticism. But the thing that Montero did compared to last year, he completely overhauled his body. He's a completely different athlete. He was stronger, leaner. He moved much better at shortstop. He hit for a ton of power. I think that he, frankly, was. I think that DSL pitching was a little beneath him for most of last year, and very easily could have been in the ACL. He's probably the one where if he can stack like what he did last year again when he gets to Arizona this year, or even moves on to low A Stockton, that I could see that happening fairly quickly. He's the one that I think could make the biggest league up this list.
The other point, the external part here is that they also, this is a team that picks eighth in the 2026 draft. It's a good draft. It wouldn't be crazy to think that if they land second best college pitcher in the class could be around pick eight. You know, that whoever that is right now, there's multiple cases for who that could be. It could be second or third best college bat in the class. You know, it could be a Drew Burris type or something like that, if that's the case, or a high school shortstop. It's a good high school shortstop class. You know, if it's a Jacob Lombard type or whatever, there's a lot of candidates where that player could very logically be someone who is going to be a top 100 prospect and could move to number one on this list right away. Again, it's that system that's in a pretty good spot right now, I just feel like.
Sure. I mean, the A's love their SEC, ACC college bats. So you mentioned Drew Burris, Derek Curiel's right there. And I think he's eighth in our draft rankings right now. I think those would be two very interesting targets. The one point I would make on Colome as it relates to this conversation, I think that folks listening to this have every right to be skeptical of big money A's international signings. It has not worked out in recent years. All that to be said, I think Colome's report, and even, you know, I've been doing the A's system for us for a handful of years now, and we don't spend, or I don't spend as much time on guys they haven't signed yet as we do guys who are currently in the system. But this is the first year I can remember that I had people bringing him up unprompted, as if to say, you know, Colome is coming. We're signing him in January. We're really interested. There's a little bit more groundswell with him than at least we're used to with some of their other high-profile IFA signings. So I think he's a fascinating guy as it relates to this conversation. But I think you're right. I think that eighth overall pick, that's a good one as far as someone. And if they stick to what they've done in the past, not only could that be someone who ranks number one, but that very well could be someone who doesn't spend too much time in the system.
Speaking of that, so this organization, again, we just talked about that this is an organization that has produced multiple regulars. Over half of their lineup is homegrown, still in their, you know, in their first contract, you know, not hitting free agency yet, contract, you know, players, you know, position players. Obviously, they've done a better job of producing hitters in recent years, but they, as we noted, that 2012 draft is pretty much the best draft, one of the best drafts that any team has done in the 21st century. So I don't want to make it sound like they've just done this for the first time now. It's not that. But when you look at this organization, say, what are they good at developing? What are they good at developing in your mind?
Well, I think it is hitting. Outside of Daniel Cusack, so let's back up for a minute. The A's feel this more than most teams, where missing on a first round pick is, can really hurt you. That can set you back. Recently, they have not really missed outside of Cusack. You know, you mentioned Kurtz, Wilson, Soderstrom, but they've also done a pretty good job at targeting hitters that have some risk in the second or third or fourth round and getting the most out of them. Like Lawrence Butler is a huge success story. I think that they were incredibly patient with Denzel Clark and all of Denzel Clark's contact issues in the minors that he hasn't fully answered yet, even in the majors, but he doesn't have to hit that much to be a very useful player to you based off what we saw defensively. You mentioned Colby Thomas. He's a similar guy who I think in maybe some other teams that didn't have such a logjam at outfield or DH might have a longer leash at a role here. So I think that they don't scare off from guys with perceived warts, and they do a good job helping guys get better, even in areas that they're already good at. So I think you're right on the money there with some of the hitting.
Well, that is kind of the wrapping up for the video portion of the deep dive. But if you're on the podcast feed, stick around. And if you're not on the podcast feed and you want to hear more, just head over to the podcast feed of Baseball America. And we are going to talk about sleepers and more right after this quick break. So, Mark, we've covered kind of in the top 10, but I do want to give you the chance to kind of talk about some of your favorite guys outside of the top 10. We've basically now have rankings for 40 prospects for each organization up at Baseball America. There's a lot more guys that you can kind of dive into, but who are kind of a couple of your, you know, the guys who intrigue you, who go beyond the 10?
Yeah, so let's stick with pitching. I think that's really it. It's how many of these guys can they get to the majors as quickly as possible to help impact the season. And I think we touched a little bit on the DeVries trade in the open of the podcast. I think it's remarkable that they were able to acquire Leo DeVries for Mason Miller for a reliever in the first place. I think that they also added on three pitchers who could help this team by the end of the season. It is a really good job by the A's. So the first guy I wanted to touch on is Henry Baez. And there was some concern at the end of the season. He had a forearm injury that cut his season short, but I believe he's healthy and expected to be part of spring training this year without any issue. I think he's a really interesting guy who's in this just outside the top 10. He's in the same grouping with the Cade Morris, who could help this team. Gunnar Hoglund's there. But I think Baez's velocity, his sinker was up to 98. He's got a slider that we have that's pretty solidly average. He's a really interesting guy to me who, if he can beat back some of the injury concerns, and he goes out and he posts and he can stay starting role, just churning out ground balls, I think he could help this team sooner rather than later. Two other pitchers that I really like who are a little bit lower down in the teens, 17th and 18th. I'm not yet ready to quit Steven Echeverria. I know last year he was a breakout pick and it didn't quite come together, but when you look at just the athleticism, the body, the velo, he's up into almost touching 100. His slider's really good. I think that the A's by the end of last season arrived at a point where for all the fastball velocity, it's metrically, it's not the best pitch. And I think that they have worked with him to pick his spots, fastball usage, a little bit smarter than he was in the past and be able to lean on his ability to spin his breaking ball. I think that he's always been young for level. I think that this year could be a big year for him. And then Zane Taylor, drafted him last year. He's a polished college five-pitch mix. I don't think he needs too much time in the minors. I don't know that his ceiling is as high as the guys that we've talked about previous to this, but they felt good enough about him to throw him out in an emergency start in AAA at the end of the season for two innings. And in that start, it was electric from everything that we've heard. He continued on into instructs in the offseason. He's added velocity, which I think has really helped him. He was one of the best strike throwers in college baseball last year. It's a really high floor, and I think that he's another guy who there's a ton of guys who could do this, but if he throws strikes, he'll move quick.
Again, there's so many arms in the system right now, especially when you get into that 11 to 30 range. That's kind of our other topic we want to touch about here. This is that it does feel like there are times, again, you are not trying to build in your farm system a perfect or a lineup, right? Like that's one thing that often is understandably kind of gets lost is you don't need to have the best catching prospect and the best first base prospect, second base, shortstop, third base. Some cases that wouldn't make a whole lot of sense because if the A's had a great first base prospect right now, probably not going to find a way under the field because they've got Nick Kurtz. But what you do want ideally is you have waves of talent that hopefully arrive around the same time where so you don't have like the guys coming in just as the other guys, are leaving in free agency or whatever. But also you want to kind of have things match up where if you have a pretty set lineup, do you have the pitching now to help that you can kind of rely on that's going to be inexpensive, that's going to be talented, that's going to develop and all that, or vice versa? Well, we just laid out this A's lineup they could use a third baseman or a second baseman, or maybe one of both. Down the road, they could probably use one more outfielder, because they've got some guys who are a little older. But position player wise, they're good at catcher. They're good at first base. They're good in, so again, Soderstrom kind of gives you a first left fielder who can also play first base if you need it. If there's an injury, we've just talked about Denzel Clark, how good he is in the outfield defensively. You've got Butler. You've got Wilson. There's got a lot of position players. It feels like that this is an imbalanced system, farm system wise, but probably in a way that fits what the A's may be needing in 2026, 2027, and maybe even 2028.
Yeah. Absolutely. We touched on it earlier with the ballpark, with their historically just unwillingness or John Fisher's unwillingness to spend a lot of money or any money in free agency. It puts even more pressure on developing homegrown pitchers. I think that we've seen outside of Luis Severino, which was a struggle last year, they haven't been able to bring in a ton of external pitching that you feel comfortable with in the long run. Aaron Civale is a stopgap, but I think that their actions are telling you that they feel pretty good about the depth in what is coming. So to answer your question, yeah, I think this is a good thing for them. I think that this sets up and will help supplement the roster in a way which will make them more whole. It's just, again, it's a timeline thing. I think that a best case scenario on some of these guys puts them into contention for a playoff spot this year. You know, if it takes a little bit longer, we'll have this conversation again next year. And I would say at that point, like, the time is now, your window is open, but they're close.
I will say Severino's experience last year is not going to help on the free agent market going forward when he talks about how, you know, it's really difficult when you can't actually go into the clubhouse during the game. I kind of, that's important to me. And you can't do that here because I can't just go walking through the outfield to go to the gates. Like, yeah, there are real, actual, tangible hurdles about playing a major league season in a minor league ballpark. That's just the reality of it. And it's not going to help, though. It's not going to help going forward. And also, does feel like that park plays pretty offensive. Although the loss, I will say, I don't care how the ballpark is situated, what the dimensions are, anything. We've seen the PCL. We've seen Las Vegas, you know, AAA baseball. I promise you that ballpark, when it does get built, is not going to be a pitcher's paradise. I feel very comfortable saying that.
They're not going to move in the walls, you know, like they have elsewhere.
You know, I feel like that there's just no way, again, that when you get to those kind of, you know, that situation, that kind of altitude, that kind of conditions, you're going to see the ball fly pretty well. And it's just kind of a part of it. But it is something where, for all of the understandably, you know, kind of the horrific years it's been to be an A's fan in recent years, obviously, you know, if you're an Oakland A's fan, I can't even imagine what that experience has been like in recent years. That's obviously something, like you said, that's kind of an ownership thing. That is the ownership's decisions. The front office staff, the players, the coaches, and all that, all they can do is try to be the best team they can be. And okay, we're starting to see kind of the you know, that last year was the first time that you kind of saw those green shoots of, you know, something else kind of springing up here. Like, you saw 76 wins. To the credit of this team, 76 wins this year, I feel like, would be a very, very disappointing outcome. Last year, it was a step forward. Now, I would say that to how you laid it out, like, this should be a 500 team. If it's not a 500 team, that would be a disappointment, I feel like.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you're looking for optimism, it's always been cyclical with the A's. They've always had periods of contention, and then they've had to tear it down and try it again. You mentioned A's fans. They're quite familiar with that. But the upshot there is that a lot of the people who have done it successfully in the past are still there, are still in that front office, are still in player development. They've done it before. They're starting to do it again. I think that this team is really interesting. I think, you know, we've already touched a ton on the hitters, but what Morales and Perkins showed, what they were able to do with Jacob Lopez last year, the success that he had, clearly I didn't see that coming based off where we had him ranked, but he missed a ton of bats and now looks like he might be in their rotation to start the season. Like, they're starting to do some interesting things on the pitching side. So again, I think that I wouldn't write it in Sharpie playoffs. But as far as when you look at when our MLB power rankings come out, and I expect they're going to be somewhere between 18th, 20th, 21st, you get into that range. There's some ceiling here with this team, I think, if everything breaks right.
Well, that is our deep dive look at the Athletics. I can't even put a thing on front of it. The team that is currently playing in Sacramento, eventually play in Las Vegas, and previously played in Oakland Athletics. And thank you, Mark, for the time. Thank you for the download. Anyone who, you know, by the way, thank you also for our subscribers, obviously, as we always like to say, because that's what allows us to do what we're doing. If you like this one, we are getting there. We are more than two-thirds of the way through, I believe, now, rolling out our deep dives of each and every organization. We're going to have all 30 of these done pretty much right around the time that you see the start of spring training games. We're getting there. I think we're about 2 weeks away from kind of being able to kind of put a bow on this project. And we do appreciate all the you know, all the views, all the downloads that we're getting on this. But if you enjoy this, do go over to baseballamerica.com. There's so much more over there, including, as we just said, we don't have, just have the A's 1 through 30 prospects, not just ranked, but ranked with full reports, tools, grades, all that. But we also wrote up another 10, 31 through 40, and we did that for all 30 organizations as well as all of the college coverage now that the Division I season is back. And now we roll into spring training and much more fantasy coverage, collectibles, everything over at baseballamerica.com. For Mark Chiarelli, I am JJ Cooper. So long, everybody.